One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com. One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host Benjamin Richardson with a new and hopefully regular series exploring gaming historia and obscura, from titles which defined the industry to forgotten or unknown gems that frankly deserve more attention, and inevitably at some point down the line, Shenmue. Now, I quite wanted to call this the South Bank Show, though that was understandably shot down with silence, so, you know, we'll see how that evolves in the weeks to come. And today we're starting with a real biggie, a game which honestly couldn't be any less obscure or more important, and it's Super Mario 64. Now, when Mario 64 was launched in 1996 as an accompaniment to Nintendo's newest hardware, the N64, it fundamentally revolutionized the video game landscape, effectively setting the template for the industry's wholesale leap into 3D. And though it wasn't strictly the first fully 3D game, it pretty much taught every other developer just how to pull it off, from the way Mario controlled to its novel Lucky 2 camera, a camera which was so novel, in fact, that Nintendo patented it. But the game, it was no mere tech demo. It was also a perfectly polished title in its own right, bursting with the sort of invention and personality typical of Nintendo's flagship content. It's a game that, frankly, anyone with even the vaguest interest in gaming history owes it to themselves to play, even is, as we're probably about to learn, some of the things that wowed us a quarter of a century ago are probably its most frustrating, off-putting aspects today. Now, today I'm joined by What Culture Music's literal Man of Steel and a fellow Nintendo fanatic, James Dowse, one of two people who actually bought the Wii U. James, how are you?
I'm good, thank you, Benjamin. How are
Very
you?
Good. Now, you recently played through Mario 64 for the very first time.
Yes.
Because owing to your very your tender age, you couldn't play it when it came out. You didn't exist at the time.
Nope.
So your experience with it is diametrically opposed to mine. Now, I came into it, the first time I was exposed to Mario 64, it was at a branch of Woolworths. I went there with my nana. And I remember there was a display model there, and I absolutely begged my nana, please, 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 can we play this? Like, just I had to play it. Obviously, it wasn't, I don't think it had been released yet, and I think it was like a demonstration model about a few months before it came out. So eventually the clerk came out, and he spent a good 10 minutes messing about with wires, plugging things in, hooking things up, plugging controls in. A real awful thing to make this poor man do. And then after all that, my nana, I literally got to run around in a circle in the castle before my nana said, right, that's enough, we have to go now, let's leave this poor fella to his job. And I thought, what an absolute waste of time. But from those 5 seconds I got to run around Peach's castle, I knew I had to play this game in its entirety. Whereas for you, you've had 24 years of being told it's the best game of all time. It changed the industry. So really, I want to know, could you appreciate the game out of this context? And did you enjoy it generally? What were your general thoughts about Mario 64?
See, when I first played it, I had the previous experience of Super Mario Galaxy being my favorite game of all time, which is quite eerie to say when I've never played Super Mario 64, which is arguably the key gem of the genre. So I went in thinking that it will be something else. And the first thing I noticed, arguably...
Did you just interrupt you there? Did you expect it to be similar to Mario Galaxy?
I expected it to not have many different features. I expected movement to be the same, camera to be the same, everything to be somewhat the same, just with a new ability of spinning.
Basically like a primitive version of the games that you'd enjoy later.
Yes. I just thought it would be, what was it, 11 years later? Mario 64, 2007,
Mario Galaxy,
wasn't it?
Galaxy. 2006, I think. 2007, 2006, yeah.
So either way,
I
didn't think in that 10 years that much would have changed. After playing Mario 64 recently, I noticed immediately that the camera and the controls were just abysmal. However, once I got used to it, the game was incredible.
So you were able to overcome those flaws, yes, and enjoy it anyway. So did you at the end of it appreciate just why it was special, or did you just enjoy it in its own right?
Both. 100% both. It was obviously a product of its time because it was it was brand new, wasn't it? It was a brand new experience, yep, as you said, then with Wolves. But going back, you can see where how the game evolved from that point, kind of thing. You can see that is the game which has been evolved from in the following games, kind of thing.
So was there anything about it that surprised you in the way that it presented itself? I know Mario Galaxy and certainly later Mario games have a tendency to hold your hand a lot more, whereas Mario 64 just throws you straight into things.
Yeah. Well, I noticed that immediately with the... I didn't really know about the thing where you're in the castle and you look up towards the sun. Yeah. The roof, I guess. The sunroof of the castle.
Well, I don't think the game tells you at any point that you even can look around.
That's what I mean. I had to figure that out myself because it didn't hold my hand and I didn't know that. And then that then unlocked the wing cap, didn't it? And then I could then play the game further and unlock more stars throughout. So just from one experience of just messing about, I discovered this whole other world within the game.
You see, it's really interesting the way it speaks of Nintendo, and particularly Shigeru Miyamoto's confidence in the controls in the way that Mario moves, is that in that opening area, it doesn't tell you anything. It's just outside of Peach's Castle. It's a very safe area. And basically, they're just throwing you in there and saying, experiment with the buttons, see what you can do, learn how to do it, then use these abilities throughout the game. And it's, I think it's that sense of discovery that really contributes to the sense of freedom that we'd never had before, rather than it being really didactic and telling you this is what you have to do, this is what way you have to jump. And that's why I actually think the caps themselves run contrary to that philosophy. They're effectively like locked keys that are sort of probably the weakest parts of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So and the camera as well, it is poor, mostly because you don't have the second analog stick that everybody's used to.
Yeah.
But how long did it take for you to get used to that and put that away, put that to one side?
annoyingly, about halfway through the game.
Right. So you didn't enjoy it for a good chunk.
I can say that, yes. I wanted to go for all 120 stars, and I think I got to about TikTok clock. And that's when I realized that I needed to learn these controls. Because
TikTok clock's one of the last levels in the game.
Yes, and that's what I meant. So I got all that way throughout the game. And I was like, right, I need to sit down and learn how to play it. Because obviously one of the stars is getting all the red coins. And doing that with a basic knowledge of how to move and how the camera moves is impossible. You need to know how to play the game to get those 8 coins.
But it's sort of interesting, though, that in that the difficulty of a game is adaptive in that you can pick and choose the objectives as you want, and you can skip certain stars. So you could have... Were you trying to gather every star you went through, or were you just through-line into the star barriers on the doors to try and beat the game as soon as possible with the intention of then going back to gather the rest?
Once again, it was a bit of both. With, like, Bob-omb Battlefield, or... How do you say it? Bob-bomb?
Bob-bomb. Bob-omb.
Yeah, Bob-omb Battlefield. I wanted to get as many as I could, but then I realised that I couldn't potentially get the one where I had to shoot through without the winged cap. So that meant that I had to explore, find the winged cap and go on. So it was kind of just a case of getting them out of stars, getting to the door, unlocking it, carrying on with the game. Then once I'd complete it, I'd go back.
Now, what were your issues with the controls? Because this is something that is mentioned quite a lot by people playing Mario 64 out of time.
You couldn't... And I find... I'm trying to think... It was moving around in a circle. If you were stuck down on a circle, you could not do a 360 whilst on the exact same spot, which I'm fairly certain you can do in modern 3D platformers now. But then if you wanted to do a 360, you had to do a full turn, which meant that almost falling off of the edge of the cliff. And it's little things like that I didn't think would be a problem until I did it.
See, that was something that was rectified in Mario Sunshine.
Yes.
So even Nintendo recognised this was a bit of a problem in Mario's controls. I think they were going for... there was a part of the the problem is that they were very excited about the new technology, the analog technology, and the idea of turning in a full circle of it was still novel at the time. Mm-hmm. But also it was a little more realistic, which, I mean, you look at the rest of Mario's moves, they're not exactly realistic. He's doing triple jumps and he's jumping into the sky and he's flying and all sorts of things. But if you've ever tried to turn on a sixpence in your house, it is very difficult. You know, you have to stop and turn around. So, you know, there's an element there of trying to apply real world physics to it, but you're quite right. And I don't recall that being an issue whatsoever when I played it in 1997. I got all 120 stars. There was only one I couldn't get. I had to call Nintendo's helpline for it. And the woman on the phone was, she immediately knew. She was like, have you got the second star on the slide? And I said, what second stars? Oh, you've got to go up the slide. So I made, she was bang on there. Really helpful. Thank you for that. but the controls, no, they never bothered me. I think I had great problems with the camera in Banjo-Kazooie, a game which pretty much took everything Mario 64 did and tried to improve upon it without necessarily bringing anything particularly new to the table, which I also think is ironic because I think Mario Odyssey, which came out a couple of years ago and could be considered the first true sequel to Mario 64, I think shares a lot more in common with Banjo-Kazooie than it does with Mario 64. Now, you played Mario Odyssey last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you enjoyed it thoroughly. Having played Mario 64 afterwards, do you recognize the DNA of Mario 64 within Odyssey?
Absolutely.
Does that game make any more sense to you now?
I wish I'd played them in the reverse order of 64 and then Odyssey, much like everybody else on the planet, to be honest.
Exactly.
One of the key things I noticed immediately was in Odyssey, once you've collected a power moon, you stay in the level and you do not leave the level. Getting a star, and this happened in Sunshine as well, but that was
I think Sunshine's worse in this regard.
Oh, absolutely it is. It kicks you out every 5 minutes, and if you get a blue coin, it saves every single blue coin.
Which I actually quite like.
What, getting the blue coins?
I like it. I like that it saves. It made me feel secure. It made me feel comfortable that I could turn it off and do other things, which I didn't want to do, ironically. I wanted to just play it all night. Yeah. But the thing about kicking you up a level, that is something Banjo-Kazooie got right. You'd collect a jigsaw piece, or a jiggy, as in the words of Will Smith, and you'd get to continue throughout the world. So it felt a lot more fluid and a lot more connected. Now, I've been racking my brains to try and think why Mario 64 didn't do this. And I've come up with two ideas, and I don't know if you might disagree. You're welcome to. The first is that they wanted the levels to evolve as you went through them. And you do see in some levels there are slight changes in Thwomp's Fortress, the big tower built up after you kill Thwomp. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of more significant changes than that. There aren't many, to be honest. I think there's an eagle that comes in the same level.
Yes, because that's the one what takes you to the star in the little box, which go on, sorry.
No, I was just going to say the most notable example of that is in Dire Dire Docks, because the submarine disappears after the first star. Now, I don't really know why they couldn't contract. The submarine's a different matter. I don't think they could make that vanish on cue. But I don't know why, after beating Thwomp, for example, that fortress can't rise out of ground. I think the N64's capabilities would have allowed for it.
Mm-hmm.
So the actual reason why I think it's that Nintendo, as confident as they were in the controls and to just let you go at it, what had happened with this game is it very much changed the concept of the goals of progression. Whereas previously it was a case of getting from A to B, getting to the flag at the end to complete a level. Now it was throwing you out there and saying, choose your own objective from a number of them. So I think Nintendo thought, we need to give the player some sort of guidance here. So we'll have stars with separate names.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously to see the other clues, they have to come out the level. So I actually think it's quite a bit, it's a scruffy solution. And I don't necessarily think it's a solution. I think they could have just had a list of stars.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's hindsight. And it's something that Banjo-Kazooie rectified. And as you say, Mario Odyssey absolutely rectified it.
Yep.
And I think it's a better game for it.
I think going on that point as well, there was a thing in Thwomp's Fortress where you had to destroy a wall to get a star. I had absolutely no clue how to do that.
So we'll in a little while we'll get on to your favourite and least favourite stars. I actually think that might be one of the worst ones in the game.
But going on from that point, how you said how each level was named after a certain star, for example, for ages I can't remember what the star was exactly called, but it was probably like Break the Wall.
I think it's even more obscure than that. I think it's Chip Off the Old Block.
It was that, yes. Yeah. And for ages, I was just like, I honestly don't know. And then there was a cannon, and then Chip Off the Old Block. Of course, it makes sense now.
Chip Off the Old Block, that's an interesting piece of localization, because that's obviously a little idiom that we understand in English.
Yeah.
But what it means is it's like father, like son. Now, you've just killed a giant thwomp, so it's natural to assume I need to kill some of his little kids to get the star. Like Mario just performing mass genocide and through a brick race. But no, what you have to actually do, for people who aren't aware, is you have to cannon yourself into the side of the platform to make it break, and it reveals a star, which is odd because there's not much in the way of breakable objects.
Yeah.
Otherwise, and there is on that level though, there's a hidden life under the fortress that you can punch your way through to find. I
didn't know that.
Just a little secret there. Don't tell anyone. That's between you and me. So we talked about the controls earlier. Now, and we also talked about the progression and how we wanted to be more open. The one exception to that is in the Bowser Gauntlets, where basically you're going from point A to point B to really focus you on the battle coming ahead. Now, this is something, these sort of linear levels would be revisited again in the floodless levels of Mario Sunshine.
Yeah.
In the void spaces. And but pretty much, ironically, as technology improved, it formed the basis of Mario Galaxy and Mario Galaxy 2, where the just sort of contextless courses to the end. And then Mario 3D World took it in a different direction with a fixed camera angle. So it was sort of interesting that fixed camera angle was originally the view, was originally the plan for Mario 64. But it was only when I think Sega had patents on a fixed camera like that they decided to go with the complete freedom of movement. Do you think it's interesting that the series has gradually sort of devolved into something a lot more linear and a lot more direct? And can you understand the reasons why?
Well, I do remember, because obviously the controllers for Mario Galaxy was, you know, a thing, wasn't it? With a Wii remote and a nunchuck, it was a whole thing in itself. And once again, it was stuck with the one analog stick. Like, they pretty much went back in time with that control setup.
See, I remember that controlling the camera in Mario Galaxy was even more cumbersome than Mario 64.
That's what I'm about to say, because you had to press up on the D-pad, and that's when you'd go first-person mode. And it was somewhat of a fixed camera, but you could occasionally look where you wanted, and occasionally move it at, like, I think it was about 30-degree whatevers.
It was very awkward.
It was just strange. It was a very strange choice, Mario Galaxy's camera. And it felt like a de-evolution from, I guess, the previous ones, really.
And then I thought Mario 3D World was even more so, as it took you a complete fixed camera with just linear courses, very much in the 3D land style.
Yeah.
And I can't really understand why, as technology improved, Nintendo gradually became less confident in the abilities of their user base to just go in there and play and enjoy it, which is very much the philosophy of Mario 64. But it's something that they did refine in Mario Odyssey.
Can I just ask a quick point? But with 3D land, obviously there was a fixed camera for a reason, and that was from the 3DS's capabilities. Yeah. But because 3D World was the true sequel to that game, do you not think that the camera was based like that purely to keep it the same as land, as 3D land?
I do. I can't really understand necessarily. Yeah, but wanted to have some coherency between 3D Land and 3D World.
Yeah.
But they didn't have to make 3D World. You know, that was their decision. They could have just made the full-on Super Mario 64 sequel that people had been asking for since 1996, which we didn't get until a couple of years later. And I think it could have really helped the Wii U go forward. It might have just been the thought, you know what, this console, we've made such a hash of marketing it, we won't waste our really good ideas on it. Yeah. We'll just do something, you know, that's already been done before.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Now, speaking of things that had already been done before, when Mario 64 was in development, the way it started is that on the SNES, Nintendo were working with a company called Argonaut, who had introduced the Super FX chip that featured in games such as Stunt Race FX and Starwing, or Star Fox as it was called in America.
Yeah.
And Shigeru Miyamoto looked at this and he considered, could he possibly make a fully 3D Mario game using it? And his original idea, I think he wanted to do something like a in like a toy box with toy trains and models or something like that, but it never really came to fruition. Now, there's a piece of video game apocrypha that suggests that Argonaut, this comes from a man called Jez Sam, he said he was working on a 3D Yoshi game, which was abandoned, and then Nintendo stole to make Mario 64, and then Argonaut went away and made a game on the PlayStation called Croc, Legend of Gobbos, which, you know, they've made something that looks like a dinosaur. We might as well make it into a crocodile. That's easier than doing a completely new character. So, that story, I do believe it is nonsense. Bez bollocks.
Would you even consider Yoshi as a big IP at that point?
Well, possibly, because he'd just been the star of Super Mario World 2.
Yeah, Yoshi Island comes,
But it wouldn't have been Yoshi without Mario. I just can't imagine that for a big 3D platform game that would have tested the waters with Yoshi, and indeed they didn't, because they released Mario 64, which was, it did have Yoshi, and we'll get on to that, but it was all Mario. But the point here is that Croc came out on the PlayStation in 1997, and I don't think it's unfair to say it was vastly inferior to the game that it supposedly birthed. Now, not necessarily Croc, but having played other PlayStation platforms at the time, such as Crash Bandicoot or Spyro, do you feel like any of them ever came close to Mario 64? And having now played Mario 64 after them, do you understand like how long people had to wait just to get something that even came close to it?
Well, the reason I never played Mario 64 growing up was because
because you weren't alive.
Not only that, but it's because I grew up with a PlayStation.
So yeah, as a lot of people did, because it was a vastly more popular console.
It was, yeah. Especially in the UK anyway. Mm-hmm. But so I grew up with the Spyros, the Crashes, the Ratchet and Clanks, and the whatnots. But it's only until I played Spyro and Crash remakes, really, that I can really add to this opinion. And the games were good, but it just doesn't compare at all to Super Mario 64. I didn't enjoy as much enjoyment out of those.
If you went back back to them now as well, would you find them even more maybe inane or rote or perhaps just lacking in originality?
Yeah, I would 100% say so.
I know there's a lot of ardent Spyro fans out there. I actually thoroughly enjoyed Spyro, but yeah, I enjoyed it because it was effectively a new Mario 64 game.
Yeah,
I didn't think it brought anything fresh to the table. I thought Ape Escape was the first game on the PlayStation to truly match the quality of Mario 64, and it did it. And it was helped by the gimmick of the dual analog sticks having like a real impact on the way it controlled. But then again, we went back into like Jak and Daxter and Ratchet and Clank, very good games, but stuff that we'd seen before. You know, there's nothing that was really improving on that formula. Even Banjo-Kazooie, I would say refined the formula, but didn't add anything.
Yeah, I think one thing that Ratchet and Clank added, and this
weapons.
Not only weapons, and I feel like this might be biased because I really enjoyed that game growing up, but it was the story. I actually quite enjoyed the story of Ratchet and Clank.
Well, yeah, okay, so that is definitely an area in which Mario 64 is weak. So yeah. do you know the plot of Mario 64?
Yeah, everybody does. He's just going for a cake this time round, isn't he?
Well, so he says, but this has always bothered me because the Princess Peach's castle does not have a kitchen. I've explored that castle back and forth. It's horrendously decorated. Quite honestly, they'd need to get someone in sort that out. It's like imagine that on changing rooms, would be absolutely devastated. It's got far too many paintings, far too many staircases. It's not very accessible at all. It's got a lovely garden, although it's haunted, so it's not ideal. The cellar's flooded.
Yeah.
No, it's
a bit of a mess, really, isn't it?
It's shambles, it's dilapidated, but it absolutely does not have a kitchen. So this cake, it's in the great tradition of games, it is a lie.
Yeah.
Now, just talking about...
Unless Bowser wrote that letter, of course.
Well, I've wondered about this. Now, do you know who voiced that letter?
Who, Peach?
Yeah.
I don't know then, but I know now that it's the same voice as Cortana off of Halo, but I don't know who it was then.
Well, this was Leslie Swan, who was the editor of Nintendo Power magazine.
Okay.
And she also wrote all the English dialogue, including, you know, the old chip off the block. I just love the idea that they just said, right, you're
around. Get yourself to the mic.
Can you remember what she says? Can you do your best impression?
Absolutely not.
Dear Mario, please come to my castle. I've baked a cake for you. Peach. It's the first time she's ever referred to as Peach in a mainline Mario game as well.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if that's...
Was it just Princess Toadstool beforehand?
Princess Toadstool, yeah, which is... it's not a great name, but I don't know if Peach is a nickname based on some physical characteristic of hers, or if it's her first name. I won't speculate on that. But getting back to the castle now, the castle has arguably as much personality and as much to find and discover as the levels themselves. And I think the castle, it also really set the template for what a hub world should be in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got so much personality. Did you enjoy running around the castle as much as you did the levels?
Yes, 100%. I struggled getting all of the stars within the castle grounds because I didn't realise...
You should have rung the Nintendo hotline.
I should have. Admittedly, I don't think they're still up. And admittedly, there was one thing. I only cheated, quote-unquote, once. And that was with the... I'll tell you what, it might have been with doing the slide again. Because I had absolutely... No, it was the bunny, getting the bunny again in the basement. I'd already got him once. I didn't realise there'd be another star hidden behind getting him a second time. But things like that, exploring and stuff, it was just a very fun experience.
Yeah, that bunny, by the way, it's called MIPS, which is the name of the N64 processor, which is just nice, isn't it? A reference that a lot of people would get. do you have any favourite levels or least favourite levels, favourite stars?
After spending roughly 5.5 decades on TikTok Clock, I'd probably have to throw that in as my favourite.
How long did it take you to work out that you could adjust the speed of the mechanics depending on the time?
Far too long, because I thought I thought my game was broken when I saw that one time the things spun at 1,000,000 miles per hour, and then the next time they just wouldn't work. And I thought, oh, geez, I broke the game. Turns out, nope, I just went in at 2:10 and then broke the game.
So I liked TikTok Clock because of that novel, that little gimmick. Right? I thought it was annoying going up the same little vertical gauntlet every time, but I actually find it really interesting. What's Rainbow Road, it can do one, quite honestly. And
The
levels in the basement, Shifting Sandland, I despise.
Yep.
Lethal Lava Land. Now, you probably like that as someone who used to work watching fires for a living.
Yes. Yes, my hometown is based on a fire. But, yes, I'd say the inside of that pyramid was very good. Mm-hmm. The outside of the pyramid I don't really care for because I... up those towers when the sand sinks you in every time and you get booted out.
Yeah, it's the instant death, isn't it? Yeah. Well, that's another thing. When you die, the level, it kills you. The lives, I don't really know what purpose for Surf. It's like, this is the first game where the concept of lives and game overs really didn't mean anything so much as just having to watch a tedious cutscene and run back to where you were. And it's something that, bizarrely, Nintendo stuck with in Mario Galaxy and Mario Galaxy 2. And it wasn't until Odyssey that they finally ditched the concept of lives and just gave you a penalty from your coins. Which is actually meaningful because you spend the coins on a nice hat. So, so there's an incentive not to die other than that it's boring.
Yeah. But could they have not have got rid of the lives gimmick from Super Mario Bros. The original one? Because it was no longer an arcade machine. So why did we need lives then?
I understand that because the game would be very short otherwise. And I think the idea is to try and elongate it. With Mario 64, it's a game you're not going to finish in one sitting. You definitely get your money's worth regardless of whether you die or don't die.
Yeah.
So, I just think it's an old school mentality, but it took them a long, long, long time to get out of.
Well, going on a short, tiny bit of a tangent, but Super Mario Sunshine, last night I played the, the Plinko machine level?
The Pachinko?
That one.
Yes. It's Bagatelle, isn't it? It's where you're bouncing around the little pins,
Gee, that was not fun at all.
Horrendous.
And I lost all of my lives. I'd have to go back. I'd have to get onto
Can you fall down the wrong thing? But you can fall out the front of the machine if you're not careful.
Yeah, it just seemed like it was very poorly designed, that entire level.
There's a couple of them like that in Sunshine. It's like
I felt the entire game was a bit, but that's...
What's a lovely holiday to a sun-kissed beach without some horrible argument in the middle of it that makes you want to go home, Really captured that element of the vacation very well.
Yeah.
Just run through a couple of bits of trivia here before we wrap up. Charles Martinet, this is the first time he voiced Mario.
Yep.
Do your best Mario impression.
Nope.
Good.
Wahoo.
Yeah, very good. I think it was only around 15 people worked on this game. Now, imagine that we have...
15?
About between 15 and 20, I think. So that's about the same amount of people who appear on our What Culture Gaming quizzes.
Yes.
And we think about the cultural contribution of those 15 people. In comparison, it does make you wonder just what you're doing in life, doesn't it? Did you manage to get all 120 stars?
I did in the end, yes. And unlocking Yoshi on the Roof.
Right, and you get an utterly, utterly pointless reward.
Of Yoshi on the Roof, yes.
Yeah, but he also gives you 99 lives. Oh, yes. You can do nothing with because you completed the game.
I forgot about that. That's how good it was, yeah.
Yeah, now I think a lot of people were hoping, like, is there some secret here that if I get all the stars, I meet Yoshi, is there a way we can play as Luigi?
Luigi, yeah.
And for years and years and years, the rumours persisted that somehow Luigi can be playable in the game. There's that plaque in the garden where it says Eternal Star, I think, but a lot of people think it says Luigi is real 2049 or something like that. L is real, which, it's just nonsense. It's just a blurry text. However, eventually, Mario 64, when it was sort of remade for the DS in 2005, did give you the chance to play as Luigi.
Yeah.
Did you play the DS remake?
I did. I played an awful lot of it last week, and I don't know, it's a good port. It shows off the DS's capabilities, but once again, the camera was an issue. They should have waited until the 3DS to have an analog stick.
Well, that's the thing for me. It took Mario 64, reduced it on a small screen, but took away the one thing that made Mario 64 so good, which was the controls. Now, originally, you could either use the D-pad, or you could use a very bizarre little, like a thumb... sheath that you held your thumb on the touch screen and you wiggled it around to move Mario. Not ideal. And it wasn't until, as you say, the 3DS when that game actually came into its own. So it's because of that, still today, I don't think we've had a true Super Mario 64 remake that is that is as good as the original anyway, or as playable or palatable for a modern audience.
Yeah.
But we've heard rumours that on the Switch, Nintendo might release all the Mario 3D Mario games as part of a collection.
For the 30th and 35th anniversary of Mario?
Yeah, 35th, yeah. If that was to happen, would you like them to be presented in the purest form with no changes? Or would you like to see Mario 64 altered in some way? And if so, how would you like to see it change?
Now, I actually thought about this one. In Mario Kart 8, you can play on the TikTok clock level, which I'm presuming was made on the DS. I think it was that track. Either way, that track is stunning. There's clocks everywhere. It's just a really good... It looks just visually incredible. And now, thinking of a Mario 64 game that looks as good as Mario Kart 8 might be something else.
Or maybe one that looks as good as Mario Odyssey.
Well, you could compare it to that, yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it would be something else to have a proper remake. And obviously in Mario Odyssey, a bit of a spoiler, but at the end you could play in Peach's Castle. Having those graphics and that gameplay and all of that kind of stuff would be incredible. Just porting Mario Odyssey into the Mario 64 levels.
Basically like to see the whole game rebuilt in a modern engine. Or would you maybe just rather see the controls adjusted slightly?
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
It's a difficult one for me because I'm so interested in gaming preservation that I want people to experience a game as it was meant to be played.
Yeah.
So they can form a fairer opinion on it, but I also want people to enjoy it, and I want to enjoy it again, maybe in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, see, I've got a slight tangent on that. Can you remember when... Have you played the Halo series at all?
Yes, I've played the first two.
Yes, well, Halo Combat Evolve was remade, the multiplayer, using Halo Reach. So all of the maps were in Halo Reach, kind of thing, which is a story in itself. But that didn't have the same feel as the original, and thus not as good. So I've kind of devalued my own previous point of saying that if they just did Mario Odyssey's engine for this, it won't be as good again.
So you've convinced yourself.
I've just convinced myself in a second that we shouldn't really do that, should we? I've learned from previous mistakes from the Halo games that probably is not a good idea.
See, one of the most interesting things for me about Mario 64 is that the N64 itself was delayed so Shigeru Miyamoto could finish this game.
Right,
now,
okay.
You can't imagine that ever happening now. Now you just think about how long it's taking us to ever get the game remade. Now, Miyamoto famously said that a delayed game will come out eventually, but a bad game will be bad forever. Except for Mario 64 DS, which eventually became good in the 3DS. I think, I don't know how that necessarily relates, I just think it's interesting. I think maybe Nintendo should, maybe they should hold off on remaking it. Maybe it's perfect as it is. He spent all that time then doing it just right with the hardware, and it shouldn't be recontextualized to modern hardware, other than as a history piece. I don't know. Maybe that's just how I feel about it.
No, what's stopping them from doing the thing that we're paying every single year to get a subscription to play virtual console games? Why don't they
That is a very, very good question. I don't think it's ever been ported to... I think it was on the Wii.
It's been on them all. It's been on the Wii and the
Wii.
It
was on the Wii as well?
Yeah.
Okay, so on two of them.
Yeah, yeah.
But not on the Switch, because there's currently no N64 games at all.
For some baffling reason, no.
Which, you've got to think there's going to be at some point. Seems like every 2 months they just randomly drop some obscure Japanese, exclusive Japanese shoot 'em up.
Yeah, like for the SNES emulator.
Yeah, which I appreciate, but it's not what people want.
But is there a reason that they're delaying the Nintendo 64 one so they can port these games over with an official £60 remake?
It might be. They might have eyes on a mini N64, or they might be planning this big compilation, as we've discussed. We'll wait and see. Who knows what Nintendo don't do things.
The way other people would think.
But just do things at random and on whims.
Yeah.
So just as we wrap things up, I just want to ask one question, and it's an eternal question that has been plaguing Mario 64 players since 1996. What does Mario say when he catapults Bowser into those bombs?
So long, King Bowser.
So long, King Bowser. Interesting.
Is it not?
I always thought it was so long, dear Bowser.
God knows.
I've got a new one there. So anyway, I think...
What's the answer to that question?
Nobody knows. The debate will rage for another day. And
Fair.
If you want to play Mario 64 today, as we mentioned, there's a few options, not many. You can obviously get an N64 and some the Legacy card, or you can get the DS remake, which I don't recommend, or you can play it on the Wii or the Wii U's virtual console, if those are still available. I think there's an obscure console that came out in China called the iQ. N64 games on it as well. So if you can get your hands on one of those, brilliant. Although more than likely you won't be able to. Anyway, for now, I really hope you've enjoyed this first podcast. You can let us know what you think at hashtag WCGP. And likewise, if you have any suggestions for games or consoles that you'd like to hear covered in future episodes, or if you'd like us to just stop doing them altogether. James, do you have any socials that you'd like to plug?
My Twitter's, my Instagram's. It's James Douse with an extra E at the end.
Yeah, it's not worth it, I'll say. But anyway, I'm not really bothered about that. You can just type my name in Google if you want. But anyway, for now, that's it. Have a lovely day and goodbye.
Thank you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.